Heidegger, Freiburg, Germany, May 1933. In the ceremonial hall of the university, a 43-year-old philosopher stands before a crowd of students and faculty, delivering an inaugural rector's address. He extols a spiritual renewal for Germany's universities and throws in slogans like the glory and greatness of this new beginning. He ends with a resounding Heil Hitler. That man is Martin Heidegger, brilliant thinker on the nature of being. Now a card-carrying member of the Nazi Party, how did one of the century's deepest minds entwine himself with one of history's darkest regimes? The tale of Heidegger is one of genius, controversy, and the perilous seductions of ideology. Martin Heidegger was born in 1889 in Messkirch, a rural Catholic town in southwestern Germany. His upbringing was humble. His father was a sexton. Young Heidegger was initially headed for the priesthood. He even started seminary. But he developed an intense interest in philosophy, spurred by reading Brentano, and switched to studying that at the University of Freiburg. He earned his doctorate and then worked under Edmund Husserl, the founder of phenomenology. By the 1920s, Heidegger's own philosophical ideas were taking shape. In 1927, he published Being in Time, Sein in Zeit, a groundbreaking and notoriously difficult work. In it, Heidegger essentially asks the question, what is the meaning of being? Philosophers had long discussed beings, entities, but Heidegger wanted to revive the question of being itself. What does it mean for something to exist? He starts with the human mode of being, which he calls Dasein, literally being there. Heidegger analyzes Dasein's structure. We are thrown into a world not of our making. We find ourselves always, already in a context, with relationships and language that shape us. We navigate life through concerns and practical involvements, being in the world. He describes everyday Dasein as often living inauthentically, absorbed in the they. Das Man, basically doing what society expects, not owning up to one's own most potential. A key concept is being toward death. Each Dasein has an awareness, usually suppressed, of its mortality. Facing that honestly can shock one out of conformity into authenticity. Realizing one's life is finite and one's own. Another famous concept is thrownness. We don't choose where or when or to whom we're born, yet those facts condition us deeply. And projection. Within those conditions, we project possibilities for ourselves. Our existence is essentially a dynamic of possibilities. Heidegger's dense prose aside, he provided an analysis of existence that influenced existentialists like Sartre, who took from Heidegger the idea that we're defined by our actions, albeit Sartre gave it a more humanist twist. But Heidegger was not exactly an existentialist in the Sartrean sense. He was more mystical in some regards, especially later, concerned with how being unfolds or reveals itself. However, precisely around when Being and Time came out, the political climate in Germany was darkening. The Weimar Republic was in crisis. Heidegger, despite being an academic, was drawn to right-wing nationalist ideas. In 1933, when Hitler rose to power, Heidegger joined the Nazi Party and shockingly became rector of Freiburg University, actively aligning himself with the Nazi agenda to Nazify institutions. During that year as rector, he gave speeches peppered with Nazi ideology, encouraged students to partake in the Führer's will, and implemented policies marginalizing Jewish colleagues. He didn't directly save Husserl, his mentor, from being dismissed due to being Jewish, which is often criticized as a major moral failing. After less than a year, Heidegger grew disillusioned with some of the Nazi administration's interference and resigned the rector position. However, he remained a party member until 1945. He retreated from overt politics, focusing on teaching and writing, but never publicly retracted or denounced Nazism, even after the war. This forever tarnished his reputation for many, raising the perplexing question, how could the author of profound insights into authenticity and care also align with a racist, totalitarian regime? That question has spawned a library of commentary. Some argue Heidegger's philosophy itself has dangerous tendencies, e.g., an anti-humanist glorification of destiny, which aligned with Nazi emphasis on Volk and fate. Others say his politics were a regrettable personal error separate from his philosophical genius. It's a debate still alive, every few years, something like his black notebooks get published in recent decades, revealing more of his anti-Semitic or pro-Nazi sentiments, reigniting controversy. Heidegger, after World War II, was banned from teaching by the Allies as part of denazification for a period. Eventually, he was allowed to lecture again by the mid-1950s, and a number of philosophers and students resumed engaging with him. Some, like Hannah Arendt, one of his former students and also his one-time lover, reconnected and somewhat forgave him, at least intellectually. But he lived a relatively secluded life in his later years, meditating on technology, poetry, and the nature of modernity. His later philosophy moved away from the analytic existential description of Dasein to more abstract ruminations. He became very interested in ancient Greek thought and poetry, especially Hölderlin. One of his later major themes was the question concerning technology. He saw modern technological mindset as a mode of revealing the world that reduces everything to resource. He called it enframing, Gestell. He worried that this instrumental view obscures other ways of experiencing being, like poetic or sacred experiences. He famously said, "Language is the house of being," meaning language is where our understanding of existence lives, and poets and thinkers help renovate that house. He also wrote about the clearing, lictum, an image of how being needs an open space to show itself, and human beings, Dasein, are like the clearing where being can manifest. This mystical bent influenced a lot of theology and environmental philosophy later. Some find in Heidegger an almost spiritual sense of care for being and nature. Despite or because of his obscurity, Heidegger profoundly influenced continental philosophy, hermeneutics, Gadamer, existentialists, Sartre, de Beauvoir, deconstructionists. Derrida often engaged Heidegger's ideas of presence-absence, and phenomenologists beyond Europe. Even some cognitive scientists and psychologists have found his analysis of everyday practical being in the world more insightful for understanding human mind than Cartesian models. However, the Heidegger case remains a cautionary tale about the intersection of philosophy and politics. Many wrestle with separating the value of Heidegger's insights from the toxicity of his Nazi involvement. Some insights of being and time, like authenticity or thrownness, continue to be core vocabulary in existential therapy and humanist psychology. His critique of technology resonates strongly in an age of AI and climate crisis. We do often treat the world as a standing reserve, as he warned. Heidegger died in 1976, having never really apologized or fully explained his Nazi years. Arendt, a Jew who escaped the Holocaust, somewhat excused him by saying his politics were a tragic error, but he was not in his heart a brute. Others, like his student Herbert Marcuse, broke with him over his refusal to own up. Today, universities still teach Heidegger, with cautionary framing. The brilliance of being and time, which turned philosophy from focusing on consciousness and objects to focusing on our situated, temporal, finite existence, is appreciated. Terms like Heideggerian signify a particular deep dive style of philosophical inquiry into existence. But so does the phrase Heidegger's silence signify a philosopher's moral silence in the face of evil. What do we learn from Heidegger's story? Perhaps that intelligence is no guarantee of moral wisdom, that a desire for a grand destiny can lead one to endorse monstrous movements, and that philosophical ideas can be double-edged. Some note elements in Heidegger's philosophy that might predispose him to Nazi sympathies: his dislike of modernity, his romanticizing of rootedness and destiny of a people, his anti-humanism, placing abstract being over concrete human individuals. These can be twisted into justification for sacrificing individuals to a supposed historical destiny, as Nazis did. It's sobering to realize a mind that contemplated being at its most profound also allowed itself to be instrumentalized by a regime of totalitarian horror. On the other hand, Heidegger's post-war insight that our technological enframing of the world is dangerous to the planet and our souls rings prophetic. The nuance and care in his early analysis of human existence continues to offer rich insights to fields as diverse as architecture, considering dwelling and space, nursing, being with others in care, and AI. What does it mean to understand something even advanced AI arguably doesn't in the Heideggerian sense of having a world? Thus, Martin Heidegger's legacy is one of dazzling philosophical achievement, indelibly marred by moral failure. For students of philosophy, he is both a must-read and a caution. His life forces us to ask, can one separate a thinker's ideas from their person? It's a case study in the responsibility of intellectuals. If nothing else, Heidegger's story reminds us that intellectual greatness does not exempt one from being deeply wrong, a lesson in intellectual humility. And ironically, in Heideggerian terms, perhaps he was an example of inauthentic falling prey. He got swept up, fallen, into the vey of Nazi ideology instead of heeding the call of conscience that his own philosophy would emphasize. We can learn from his mistakes even as we learn from his genius. As Heidegger himself wrote, in a different context, the brightest blaze of cleverness can conceal the darkest truths. He is a bright blaze and a dark truth, both.